This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The jobless keep coming.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us this morning. It's the morning open, a look at the economy just a few minutes into the trading day. Less bad for the newly unemployed, some remodeling for Fannie and Freddie, and we could be clunking through August. First, let's check, where's Wall Street? Market's up for the most part. The NASDAQ flat right now. The S&P 500 the same. And the Dow pretty much even as well at 9280. Despite some sluggish retail numbers there, same store sales were pretty anemic for July. Back to school, of course, on the minds of many parents. Costco dropped around 7%, and teen store Wet Seal sales fell 12% there. European markets higher right now, and Asian shares closed higher for the most part today, too. This morning, the Labor Department said the number of workers filing jobless claims last week dropped sharply, definitely lower than what was expected. And Doug Foreman is Director of Equities at Highmark Capital. He joins us live from San Francisco this morning. Hi, Doug.
Good morning, Steve.
So a lot of confusion, a lot of caution, I should say, around the jobs picture. But this number actually seems like a positive. Why is a 500,000 newly unemployed a good thing?
Well, it's better than it was, I guess, is what you can say.
Okay.
And that's about it. Job losses are still way too high. But overall, there's definitely some significant improvement in this number today if this proves to be continued.
This is the 38,000 mark that the newly unemployed dropped, right?
If you translate that into a monthly number, what that means is employment will improve by about 200,000 a month going forward if that number holds up. So that's a significant number on the base that we're seeing. So it is a good sign. But as you know, it's going to be bumpy on this road to recovery. So we'll see what happens.
And as we know, Doug, unemployment's done a number on the already beat-up housing market. We're hearing this morning from the administration, the Obama administration. It's starting to look today at what to do with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the government-sponsored enterprises that own half of the country's mortgages. We're going to bring in Jeremy Hobson now, Marketplace's New York Bureau. He is there. Good morning, Jeremy.
Morning, Steve.
So Fannie and Freddie were essentially taken over by the government in September. What kind of fix is the administration looking at right now?
Well, we read in the Washington Post this morning, Steve, that the White House is looking at creating a good bank and a bad bank for the assets of Fannie and Freddie. You'd basically take the bad stuff, put it in the bad bank, which would be supported by the government, and the good bank would take the good assets and hopefully attract private investment, thereby freeing up Fannie and Freddie to buy more mortgages and free banks to make more loans. That's the idea anyway.
All right. Hey, Doug Foreman, we've heard this good bank, bad bank concept come up a lot during this financial crisis, but the model's never been successfully launched. I mean, in your mind, is this a good idea?
Well, I think there's, as Jeremy points out, I think they're in the early stages and they're exploring this option. And I think, anything that can get these big mortgage providers off the doles of the taxpayer, I think would be a good thing down the road. I'm not sure this strategy is going to work. I think they're going to look at a lot of different options. But I think anything that can ultimately get the taxpayer out of the way here is a good thing.
Hey, Jeremy, quickly, when can we expect to see any movement on changes to Fannie and Freddie?
Well, the White House had wanted to figure out what to do with this by February when the president delivers his 2011 budget to Congress. An analyst I spoke with this morning said the fact that they're focusing on this so soon surprises him. And it could be, Steve, because the housing market, as you've been talking about, still in big trouble.
Yeah.
We had a report from Deutsche Bank last night that said the percentage of homeowners who owe more on their mortgage than their house is worth is going to double in the next 2 years.
All right. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson from New York. Jeremy, thanks.
Thank you.
Doug Foreman from San Francisco. We appreciate it, Doug.
Thank you, Steve.
You're listening to The Morning Report for Thursday, August 6, 2009, marketplace.org. Some unexpected and not so unexpected decisions out of Europe this morning. The Bank of England held its key interest rate at 0.5%, and the European Central Bank has just announced it'll maintain its interest rate at an all-time low of 1%. The real focus today, though, is on Britain's decision to increase the amount of cash it's pouring into the nation's economy. From London, Christopher Worth has more.
Economists sometimes boil this down to the government printing more money. What really happens is banks are able to purchase public and corporate bonds to increase the amount of money floating around in the economy. The Bank of England has already injected over $200 billion into the system. Now it's decided to increase that program by adding nearly $85 billion to its arsenal. The question now is it worth it? Andrew Clare is with London's Cass Business School. He says banks haven't been turning around and lending that money as much as officials would like, but says the UK's economy would be much worse off without it.
The reason why we're seeing green shoots is because we're pumping huge amounts of cash into the system. Interest rates are effectively at zero, and you're almost bound to get some sort of dead cat bounce in various sectors of the economy with that, in particular the housing market.
Clare says this so-called quantitative easing can't last forever. He says some hard decisions will eventually have to be made on raising interest rates to control inflation, which could cause those green shoots to wither. In London, this is Christopher Worth for Marketplace.
Picture this. The recession's so bad in this country that all the major sports leagues, the NFL, Major League Baseball, the NBA, and NHL, had to delay their seasons indefinitely. Probably wouldn't go over very well, huh? Well, that's pretty much what's happening right now in Argentina, where the soccer season has been put on hold. From the America's Desk at WLRN in Miami, Marketplace's Dan Gretsch reports.
When soccer's played in Argentina, the chanting can be heard for miles. Grant Wall covers soccer for Sports Illustrated.
Well, I'm convinced that Argentine soccer fans are the most passionate sports fans in the world. So for soccer to stop is a tremendous blow to society.
Argentine soccer clubs are nonprofits and have tended to be poorly managed. The clubs owe $80 million in back taxes and $8 million more in salaries. Normally, teams would make up that money by selling their best players to top teams in Europe.
Lately, with the global economic crisis, the teams in Europe don't have as much money to buy the contracts of the Argentine players. And so millions of dollars that normally would go into the Argentine budget, that's not happening.
To raise money, the Argentine Soccer Association is trying to renegotiate TV contracts. Meanwhile, fans are protesting in the streets. They're demanding the season start on schedule next week. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
There's a Senate hearing today that attempts to shift Washington's attention back to climate change legislation before the summer recess. Now, the issue has been largely upstaged by efforts to reform health care. But according to new research out this week, climate change may have economics on its side. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, here's Sam Eaton.
The debate over limiting greenhouse gas emissions largely comes down to the question of economic impacts. And according to a new report from the government's Energy Information Administration, those impacts would be modest. Under legislation currently before Congress, household energy bills will rise 23 cents a day over the next 2 decades. That's a far cry from opponents' predictions. They say the plan would hit families with thousands of dollars in higher energy costs. Economist Lori Johnson with the Natural Resources Defense Council says the discrepancy is easily explained. She says reports from industry groups like the National Association of Manufacturers fail to take into account things like improved energy efficiency.
There's just so much waste, and everyone knows that. So to make an assumption that we don't have these cost-effective savings that are out there is wrong.
Still, the government predicts that after a decade and a half of modest increases, energy prices will surge 20% once the climate legislation takes full effect. That translates to nearly $600 more a year by 2030, but is still far below industry estimates. I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
With the state of California billions of dollars in the hole, programs and services are being slashed everywhere. In the midst of all that, one Los Angeles program has actually expanded. Summer Night Lights keeps parks open until midnight in some of the city's toughest neighborhoods. As Marketplace's Jeff Tyler explains, that's good for kids and for the economy.
2 years ago, the Jim Gilliam Park was gang territory, but now it serves the whole community. DJs play music, teens play soccer, cooks pass out free meals.
It's like a chicken sandwich, like sloppy joe, but chicken. It's very good.
Summer Night Lights keeps parks open until midnight and keeps kids off the streets. But it's about more than recreation. It also provides jobs and training for about 160 older teens who might otherwise be drawn to gangs. Guillermo Cespedes oversees Summer Night Lights, which includes 16 parks.
Some of the training is mindset training. There's financial literacy. We help them open up a bank account.
Teens earn about $3,500 for the summer. The program teaches guys like 18-year-old Matthew Hill to use the money wisely.
We're not used to getting paid like $500 at one time. It come quick, so, you know, we might just spend it real quick, but it teaches how to, like, the saving and open up bank accounts and, like, do different things with our money.
The program is funded by a public-private partnership. It costs about $175,000 for each park. I recently toured the Jim Gilliam Park with L.A. Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa.
This program last year helped to reduce the violence in the summer dramatically.
Overall, the murder rate dropped 86% in communities around these parks. And at this one in particular,
there were 6 homicides around this park the year before. Last year, there were 0.
The program saves lives and money. A murder investigation typically costs the city more than $1 million, 5 times what it costs to run the program at a park all summer. Violence also drives businesses away. Steve Zipperman is a Los Angeles police officer.
This homicide has caused concern for this store over here who decides maybe I'll shut my doors.
Summer Night Lights runs through Labor Day. If he can raise the money, the mayor plans to expand the program to more parks next summer. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
SiriusXM reported higher quarterly revenue today. The satellite radio company raised its outlook because of optimism over its new iPhone application and the Cash for Clunkers program that's selling more cars with its service included. The Senate, by the way, is likely to vote today to add $2 billion for the Clunkers program to keep it running through Labor Day. Economics correspondent Chris Farrell joins us now to gauge how the Clunker program has affected the economy. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
So this program's been pretty popular, we know. What are its pitfalls?
Oh, there are several pitfalls. Here's what does concern me. The consumer is taking on debt in order to do this transfer. So you drive your clunker up there, and you take it into the dealership, and you get your $3,500 or your $4,500, and you get to buy a new car.
Right.
Now, most of us don't have the money to pay cash for that new car. So you're taking on some consumer debt. That, to me, is one of the pitfalls out of this program.
What kind of timing was this, Chris? Should the government have put forward this program sooner, maybe saving the auto industry from this terrific car slump?
Yes. If it hit earlier, it would probably be good. But you could argue it a different way, Steve.
Okay.
The economy's bottoming out. Now the economy's getting a kick. That gives a little boost to confidence, and that gives an extra boost to the economy.
Speaking of boosts, who else gets a boost in this Cars for Clunkers campaign?
Well, I think there's a couple things. You know, it's really not that much money, right? I mean, in this huge economy that we're in. So manufacturers are going to get a little bit of bump because the manufacturing sector has been so decimated. I expect that's where we're going to see the real rebound in some hiring and some activity, just because they've cut so far that even this program is really helping out, at least the auto industry. It's going to clear out the 2009 cars, set up the season for the 2010 cars. So that part of the economy is going to get a little bit of a boost.
All right. Marketplace economics correspondent Chris Farrell joining us. We're going to hear you on Marketplace Money too, right?
Yes, you are. And we'll be talking about our personal finances.
All right. Chris Farrell, thanks.
Thanks.
Finally, there's one business enjoying some buzz in this lackluster economy, tattoo removal. The Los Angeles Times reports one company, Dr. Tatoff, yes, that's its name, is doing so well it's considering issuing publicly traded stock. Dr. Tatoff has 3 locations here in Southern California. It's looking to add 5 more outside the state by the end of the year. Its chief executive, John Keefe, says he believes tattoo removal could be a $10 billion a year industry. Apparently it costs more to remove that tattoo with your ex-girlfriend's name than to actually put it on. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.